Welcome or welcome back to Whores for Whore. I'm Mariah.
And I'm Kayla.
And we are recording on the 1st of October, 2023. So, in honor of the high holy spooky season beginning, we will be discussing a very haunted tale. Some may say it is the most haunted tale. As the saying goes, home is meant to be a sanctuary, a refuge from the outside world, a place to take cover from the perils of everyday struggles. However, for some residents of Mayfair, a small community located in London, they discovered anything but a safe haven. This is the legend of 50 Berkeley Square, also known as the most haunted house in all of London.
I've never heard of this.
Okay, good. Me neither. I listened to a really amazing podcast. It's called Let's Get Haunted that inspired me. And if you like our podcast at all, I feel like everyone would love Let's Get Haunted. So go listen to them if you haven't. Standing at 4 stories tall and featuring a terrace and in-ground basement, so technically it's 5 stories.
That's pretty tall.
That's huge. 50 Berkeley Square was built in 1740 by an architect named William Kent. Located in the west end of London, the buildings and sculptures that can be found about the square were designed by other prominent artists, such as Alexander Munro and Robert Adam, which, like, I have no idea who those people are, but apparently they're important because every source mentioned them.
Okay.
And also, again, it's a townhome. So it's like, they'd be called brownstones in New York. That's what it's comparable to. And then it's just a big square, and they're all numbered, like, one through whatever, and this is the 50th one. Does that so make sense?
Like, quadrants?
Yeah, but, okay, so it's, like, a really tall townhome, and it's surrounded on both sides by others, and then it, like, they form a square.
Okay, so there's, like, a central courtyard.
Yep. Okay. The square has been home to several notable individuals, some for good and some for bad reasons, including Winston Churchill, who needs no introduction, and a man named Robert Clive, who, if you've never heard of him, he was basically a colonizer for Britain, and he helped secure India for the British crown, so we, like, hate him.
Good.
So the first resident of 50 Berkeley Square is not definitively known. However, I think it's safe to assume that it was someone who was really wealthy, because at the time it was built, it was, like, a symbol of luxury and prestige, and that, like, square was a really fashionable neighborhood. So it was, like, a big deal to be there.
It's, like, the first person to build in a brand new subdivision.
Yes, and each floor basically had, like, its own amenities, so you could, like, live on the fourth floor and rent out the other ones if you wanted. So it was like, it was like a business investment too, you know?
Yeah.
So we do know for sure that in 1770, 30 years after they began construction, a British prime minister named George Canning bought the home and lived in it until he died in August of 1827 due to tuberculosis.
I love that pronunciation.
What's interesting about him, you may ask, because I've never heard of this guy. His total time in office was only 119 days, the second shortest of any prime minister, just behind Liz Truss, who was forced to resign after just 50 days in 2022. So that's what she's got, or he's got going for him. Whatever.
Yeah, you have goals, so, you know.
Yeah, no longer the worst. He's the second worst. All right, so under Canning's ownership, 50 Berkeley Square experienced its first documented tragedy. So as the legend goes, in 1789, a young girl named Adeline, which is like 89, Adeline, that's like really cute. Also, Adeline's just a cute name. But anyway, she was living in the home with her family, who were allegedly super wealthy and eccentric.
Mm-hmm.
And sadly, they wanted to keep Adeline locked away from the world because she was, like, so pretty and was their baby, essentially. And they are alleged to have locked her away in a small, windowless room on the fourth floor, which is the attic of the home.
Why do people do that?
Because they're loonies, bro. That's all you gotta answer with.
You're so pretty, let's put you in, like, a tiny dark square. The fuck are you talking about?
But that's, like, such a human thing to be like, it's so pretty, I want it, and I want no one else to be able to look at it.
That's possessive, controlling, and jealous.
Yeah, it's terrible. Mixture of bad things. So one day, Adeline managed to escape the room, but she ultimately took her own life by leaping out a window on the fourth floor. So, like, it was not good. Obviously.
You think yeah. If you keep someone locked in a tiny dark square,
they eventually
go a little crazy and jump out the window.
What's that movie? Oh, Flowers in the Attic. Have you ever seen that?
Mm-mm.
Oh, don't watch it. It's so sad. But it's about kids that get locked up in the attic by their parents, I'm pretty sure. I watched that way too young. I should not have watched that.
Yeah.
So immediately after Adeline's death, rumors began to swirl, and the citizens started claiming that they saw her hanging from the window's ledge before her death as if she'd accidentally fallen. Mm. And others started to claim that they saw Adeline get pushed out of the window by an unidentified man. So we don't really know. And also, I'm assuming 1789 did not have great forensics or CCTV, so...
Or eyewitness accounts, like,
yeah, those have never been reliable.
If the norm is to lock up someone pretty in a room back then I feel like the norm would also be, and I'm just spitballing here, to say whatever you want to say to get attention. But I don't know.
I saw Goody Proctor with the devil. So sightings of Adeline's ghost began the same year that she died, and like, Lots of people have claimed to have encountered the ghost of Adeline, and an old-timey newspaper stated, quote, "Since her death, more than 50 respectable people have reported seeing Adeline clinging to the windowsill, about to drop to her doom before vanishing," end quote. Also, I like how they clarified, like, respectable. It's not these, like, hood rats, you know? It's good people.
Yes, thank you for that.
It's not the... I don't even know what 1789 hood rats would be. Like...
I don't know.
Chimney kids? Sweepers? Yeah. So Adeline's ghost is often described as a pale, ethereal figure with long, disheveled hair and sorrowful eyes. Allegedly, she roams the upper floors of the house, specifically the fourth floor, where she suffered so much in her life. Her ghostly presence is often accompanied by the sound of footsteps, chilling cries, and inexplainable cold spots.
I'm not sure that if I was locked in, like, a box my whole life, that upon my death I would continue to haunt that.
Yeah, I wouldn't hang around.
Move on, please.
Yeah. So one of the most well-known sightings of Adeline involved a man named Robert Warboys. Warboys, that was really hard for my Midwest tongue. Who, in 1840, decided to spend the night in the haunted house as a part of a dare because, heaven forbid, his ego get hurt. By this time, George Canning had passed away, and 50 Berkeley Square was now owned by a woman named Elizabeth Curzon, who, according to some sources, she was a recluse, and she, like, really never went outside, so we don't know much about her.
Mm-hmm.
But, as the legend goes, Robert met his friends at the local pub to celebrate Christmas. They drank and drank and drank and shared spooky stories to get a rise out of each other. And because the stories of the house being haunted had been going around, the men kept talking about it. However, Robert was said to have brushed off the sightings as little more than fairy tales and essentially not believe any of it. Eventually, he was dared, you know, if he's so sure that it's not true, to stay the night in the house to prove it. Not one to back down from a challenge, Robert immediately left the pub, I'm assuming drunk as hell, and headed straight to 50 Berkeley Square. When he got there, he somehow managed to convince the landlord of the house to allow him to stay the night. And some sources say that the landlord was worried because of how drunk Robert was, and he didn't want him to get robbed or, you know, get injured. So he let him stay. You know, we'll never know the reason. Nice. Yeah, that's way nicer than I'd be, because I wouldn't even answer the door, but whatever.
True.
But whatever the reasons for allowing this sleepover, it came with two conditions. If Robert saw anything at all, he was to ring the servant's bell, which would summon the landlord to his room, and he was to always keep a pistol on him.
I don't know that I'd be letting some drunk guy in my house for a sleepover and then also be like, yeah, just make sure you keep your gun on you.
Like, yeah. I think I would be like, can I take your gun, please, good sir? But
can
nope.
You get out of here?
Yeah. So Robert, thinking nothing of it, he probably thought it was like, you know, a trick to scare him, was like, oh, what the fuck? But the landlord gave Robert his own pistol to make sure that Robert would stick to the agreement. So, like, the landlord seemed pretty like, hey, you gotta do it. Which,
but
whatever.
Why? If this is a haunted house, why would you have a pistol?
Yeah, I don't know. That's not gonna help them. But these are the same people who thought, like, bloodletting was real, you know? Yeah, is that before then? Is that around here? I have no concept of time. So Robert headed to his room on the second floor, armed with the firearm and only a flickering candle.
And he's just like, yeah, this is normal.
Yeah, he's probably like, oh, this is normal. Because he's drunk. So, not long after midnight, the servant's bell began to ring frantically. The landlord sprinted out of his bed and headed straight towards Robert's room. However, the chiming suddenly stopped and was followed by a single gunshot.
What?
Robert was found in his room, huddled in the corner, his face twisted in fear, and his life... What the hell is that?
What the hell?
Is there someone else in here? Okay, everyone, hold on. I was in the middle of telling this haunted tale, and we were getting to the part where I was going to explain how Robert was dead, and all of a sudden, these balloons went off on our teams.
I actually thought I was hallucinating for a second.
Yeah, me too. I was like, whoa. Well, first, I was like, someone's in here. I was about to turn around. I was like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Okay, that was weird. Okay.
How does that happen?
I don't know, because I wasn't touching any of the controls.
I wasn't touching literally anything.
I'm scared.
This is creepy. Literally, as you were saying, his face was twisted.
Yeah.
A green balloon literally just appears in the middle of Mariah's face.
Are we haunted?
I'm not even kidding. I should start recording this just so that... like, we can have these little clips. Like, I don't know why I haven't been... Let me see. Let's just...
That was scary.
Technology sucks today. Okay, anyway, let's see if anything else happens.
Okay. Well, whatever our ghost is, the whore on the Horse for Horror podcast, Robert's dead. You ruined the surprise, so thank you. Anyway.
And they're glad about it. They've been balloons.
Yeah, it was so excited, too. Okay, anyway, It is said that Robert encountered the vengeful spirit of Adeline, who I hope is a friend of the podcast, and the shock of the experience had been too much for him. So he died.
Oh.
But we like Adeline a lot.
You're just like, so yeah, he's dead.
Yeah. Okay. So in 1859, Elizabeth Curzon died at the age of 91, and that house was bought by a man named Thomas Myers. Mm-hmm. According to the legend, Thomas purchased 50 Berkeley Square as a surprise for his fiancée. However, just days before their wedding, his fiancée dropped the bombshell that she was seeing another man and was calling off their wedding.
Ooh.
So Thomas moved into the house all by himself and never set foot outside of it again, shutting the world out.
That's rough.
Thomas is said to have saw nobody until his death, except for only a small handful of servants, and would lock himself on the fourth floor where he would sleep all day. At night, while everyone else was sleeping, Thomas would stalk the rooms of his house, shouting and wailing with only a single candle to light the way.
Oh.
While Thomas lived there, eventually, you know, he's like not going outside, so the house is not being taken care of. It falls into, you know, basically shambles, and he stopped paying his taxes. In 1870...
I don't know how he would be paying his taxes anyway. He's not going outside.
Yeah, seriously. Also, can I stop paying my taxes?
True.
In 1874, a tax agent allegedly paid a visit to the home, but upon seeing the state it was in, decided not to levy any more taxes against it. Because it was, like, that bad, apparently.
Yeah.
Thomas died that year, and the house was left to his sister, but due to the neglect and the level of disrepair, she decided to stay at her own home, so 50 Berkeley Square was left abandoned.
Hmm.
Since the home was rumored to be haunted and was left abandoned, the house obviously became a magnet to all kinds of people. I probably would have been looking in the windows too if I'd been around during this time. An 1876 newspaper article stated that the London Association of Spiritualists wished to exorcise the home of a, quote, evil presence that had dwelt there for 50 years, end quote. And although there's no record that this took place, it does, like, you know, compound the legend of the home.
Mm-hmm.
Also in 1876, a man named George Littleton decided to stay in the home to prove the haunted stories false once and for all. So according to the legend, George made his way into the home and went all the way up to the fourth floor, despite not believing in ghosts. He decided to bring his shotgun with him just in case.
Yeah, because a shotgun is the only thing that will get rid of a ghost.
Yes.
For sure.
Common knowledge.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's always stopped. No. So as the story goes, George was sitting all alone in the attic, in the dark, listening for any disturbance. Suddenly, mysterious and unsettling sounds filled the room, and an eerie apparition appeared before him. George later described the nameless thing as a, quote, brown, tendriled, misty figure, end quote. And upon witnessing this thing, he fired his shotgun at it, and after the smoke of his blast disappeared, he found nothing except empty shells. The nameless thing had disappeared as quickly as it appeared. Ooh.
I'm still confused about, like, why we're shooting guns at ghosts.
I think that they just don't know. I mean, what the fuck? I wouldn't know what to do either. I'd probably grab a gun, too.
That's true.
Yeah, that's, like, so beyond what, like, people, I don't know, are thinking of at the time that I'd lose my shit.
Mm-hmm.
So George was reportedly so frightened by this experience that he lost his sanity that very night. The next morning, he was found in a state of extreme duress, where his hair had turned completely white and he was unable to speak coherently.
Interesting.
His mind was believed to have been permanently affected by the ordeal, and just 4 years later, he also took his own life by throwing himself down a flight of stairs that were not located in 50 Berkeley Square, just like, you know, another place.
Why is that the way you want to go?
Okay, this is why we're friends, because when I wrote that, I was like, what a horrible way to do that. I was like, there's so many, like, easier ways. Like, I don't know.
A flight of stairs, like, that, I feel like that would just really hurt and probably, like, not even work.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I was like, that's not 100%, you know, accuracy thing.
Yeah.
So in 1879, Mayfair Magazine, which again is the name of their like little community area, published an article about an incident that allegedly occurred at the home. An unnamed man purchased the home that year and decided to move in with his two adult daughters. As the legend goes, the family was preparing for a visit from their eldest daughter's fiancé, a man known as Captain Kentfield. Everything was going smooth, and the family and the servants began to retire for the night. However, just as the house fell silent, a shrill scream allegedly ripped through the walls. The family ran up to the fourth floor, where the maid was staying, only to discover her huddled in the corner, hysterically screaming, quote, "Don't let it touch me! Don't let it touch me!" Unable to bring the maid to her senses, the family sent her to a hospital to be cared for, and allegedly, she was dead the following afternoon.
Jeez, this ghost works fast.
So the family, obviously shocked by what had happened, attempted to put off Captain Kentfield's visit, but he insisted on coming anyway. You know, probably saying something like, if there's danger in the home of my fiancé, then I'll find it.
I'll be there.
Yeah, I'll take care of it.
So macho, thanks.
So just a few days later, Captain Kentfield is said to have arrived at the home and allegedly demanded to be quartered in the room of the maid who had passed away, likely to prove that he was a manly man.
He seems dumb.
I know. They all are, aren't they?
Yeah.
Some things truly never change.
Yeah, I'll just take that room.
So again, shortly after the house fell quiet for the night, its residents were awoken by screaming and gunshots. As the family once again ran up to the room on the fourth floor, they found Captain Kentfield sprawled on the floor, his face contorted in fear, dead as a doorknob.
Well, he chose the room, so...
Yeah, that's his, yeah.
No, what else you expected?
So, obviously, following this tragedy, the home was once again abandoned, and, you know, everything was seemingly quiet until another Christmas Eve in 1887.
How many people have died so far?
I don't know, I wasn't counting. Let's think. Okay, Captain Kentfield, the maid, Lord Littleton, and Elizabeth Curzon, but hers is like natural, we're assuming natural because she was 91, and then Adeline, so four. That's a lot. Oh, Robert, too, that's five, right?
So six total deaths and five.
In the house.
Paranormal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's a lot.
Spooky. So, on Christmas Eve, 1887, two sailors named Edward Blunden and Robert Martin, two of the whitest names I've ever fucking heard, were on shore leave and were enjoying an evening at the local pubs. In fact, they enjoyed their evening so much that they managed to spend what money they'd saved for lodging, on alcohol.
That is on par.
Yep, that's expected.
Sure is. Good job.
So the two decided to wander London looking for a place to stay that was free. Eventually, they found themselves in Berkeley Square and found that number 50 appeared abandoned and, you know, shitty, decaying. What is it? Oh, the kitty?
He's pissed.
I was going to say, Adeline hasn't been hanging around. No.
No, he was scratching at the door, so I asked Jake to let him in, and he came in grumbling at me because he didn't get up.
Cute.
Come lay down.
So cold, tired, and desperate, Blunden and Martin broke into 50 Berkeley Square through a basement window. Their plan was to stay in the house overnight, sober up, and sneak out early in the morning.
Mm.
They chose a room on, you guessed it, the fourth floor.
Fourth floor.
And made themselves comfortable before drifting off to sleep. Shortly after, though, the sound of footsteps echoed down the hall, approaching the room the two were in. Fearing they made a mistake, the two men jumped to their feet with excuses ready as the door slowly creaked open. But instead of a human, a slimy, slithering, tentacle monstrosity allegedly climbed into the room. The two scrambled to escape, but during that, Blunden and Martin were separated. Martin managed to run out the door and flee into the night seeking help, but Blunden was not so lucky.
Mm-hmm.
Sprinting through the streets, it didn't take Martin long to find a policeman, who together they returned back to the house to find Edward Blunden dead outside the house on the pavement below, as if he jumped through a window in his terror. Ooh. Spooky.
That's pretty brave to go get a cop after you just broke into a house.
Yeah, dummies, whatever. So throughout the 1870s and 1880s, neighbors of the still abandoned house complained that it was a source of loud noises such as cries, moans, and poltergeist phenomena that included bells ringing, furniture moving, and shit being thrown out of the windows.
That makes sense.
These tales were so wild and frightening that in 1913, Charles Harper published a book called Haunted Houses, and he claimed that 50 Berkeley Square was haunted by, quote, an unnamed raw head and bloody bones, a being that is now better known as the Boogeyman.
Oh. So is that where this came from?
Yeah, it's like one of the origin stories. Probably just like a haunting of the Boogeyman, not his origins.
That's pretty cool. I like that.
Yeah. So in 1938, 50 Berkeley Square was purchased by Mags Bros Limited, which is one of the longest established antique booksellers in the world. This company still owns and occupies the home today. And according to an article on their website, since the purchase of 50 Berkeley Square, there have been no haunted encounters or sightings. However, unconfirmed sources have stated that despite Mags Bros Limited's effort to distance themselves, there are still some hauntings happening there. A young woman is said to have saw a shapeless mass of brown mist allegedly moving quickly across the room and then vanishing into thin air. A cleaning lady is said to have felt the presence of a ghost follow her from room to room, day after day. And a man walking upstairs allegedly had his glasses torn off of his face and thrown across the room. Employees are not allowed to visit the fourth floor, and rumor has it that a police notice hangs on the wall inside the home that was put up in 1950 and states that the top floor of the home, also known as the fourth floor, was to never be opened, not even for storage.
Interesting.
And that is the legend of 50 Berkeley Square, the most haunted home in all of London.
Wow.
Yay!
That's too creepy.
Yeah, that's like, that's a perfect, you know, October celebration one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's pretty creepy.
Yeah, I'll never be going there either.
Nope.
I'm not. Zach Baggins. What? Ba-dum-tsh.
Oh, yeah, he should go there.
Yeah. Oh, maybe we'll see if there is an episode and leave a review for you guys.
Yeah, that would be cool. He probably wouldn't go there, though.
No. He likes not actually haunted places because it's scripted. Oh, wait, did I reveal it? But no, that was our first episode of the High Holy Spooky Season, and we hope you guys come back in the next 2 weeks for our next episode.
Mm-hmm.
We love you all.
Bye.
Bye.